It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so I am going to tell a joke that I heard last night. Don't worry, it's completely clean, it's fine.
Thanks for preparing me.
With that, here's the problem. I don't think you or the listeners are going to find it that funny, because it's really just sort of random and dumb. But in the moment, it was hilarious that I still, like, laugh about it.
Okay.
But I was by myself in that moment.
Oh.
And I'm like, I need to share this. Even though, I'm sharing this purely for my benefit, is
okay.
What I'm saying.
Okay.
But, so, you know, I watch a lot of British panel shows on YouTube, because I like them, and that's where they are. And I was watching one called Mock the Week, which is it's ostensibly a political, making fun of politics show.
Okay.
And it's hosted by Dara O'Brien, who I really like, and it has some regulars that are on there all the time and some that show up often and stuff. But anyway, last night's was weird for me because it was actually a recent one. They must have just started a new series or something, because, like, they were actually talking about, like, the North Korea summit and stuff like that.
Mm.
And it's been a while since I've seen one that was actually, like, remotely current. But so, at the end of every episode, the final segment they do is a thing called Scenes We'd Like to See. And do you remember, I don't know if this was true on the original British Whose Line, but on the Whose Line Is It Anyway that Drew Carey did, and I think on the one that Aisha Tyler did, one of the games was called Scenes from a Hat. And the people would stand on the steps on either side, and the host would draw something out of a hat that was like a topic, and people would come down to the mic when they had an idea and make a joke.
Okay.
And so it's just off-the-cuff jokes about a topic. That's essentially what Scenes We'd Like to See is. They all stand there on the sides, and they put up a topic, and they come down. And it's all things about, like, unlikely things, or, like, things you're unlikely to hear at a press conference. And then it'll be something about that or whatever. But it's not all, those aren't always political for some reason. And they had one that was commercials that never made it to air.
Mm.
And there were all these different ones. And then this guy, who I didn't ever see before this, and I didn't particularly think was funny up to this point, his jokes had not really landed with me, goes up there and he says, "Cars, because horses are sometimes just two guys in a costume."
What?
And everybody, including me, lost it.
Because horses. Wow.
Yep.
That is
just loved
really
it.
Weird.
So yeah, that's why you should drive cars, because you can't trust those horses. They might just be two guys in a costume.
You never know.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I absolutely love that, and it's like stuck with me the whole time. But they had Jazz and I have talked about this. James Acaster, the comedian, he's fairly common on there also. And he likes to just come up with these ridiculous things. And so they had, their games are often like, we'll give you the answer to something, you tell us what this is, or like, we'll show you a picture, you tell us what the picture is of. And so they had one that was, all it said was mild, severe, and Armageddon. And the game is, everybody makes jokes for a while, and then eventually when the host decides it's gone on too long, he's like, can somebody give me the real answer? And that one was actually, it had leaked that those are the scenarios that have been planned for by the government if they do Brexit and they don't make a deal with the EU before they leave.
Mm.
The possible scenarios are mild, fallout, and severe, and Armageddon. But before they got to that, James Acaster said, are these the three options that I give criminals when I'm doling out my vigilante justice on the streets? And it becomes this whole thing where he's like, yeah, everybody's like, oh, your secret identity, you're giving it up. And he's like, yep. Hey, criminals, I'm the pummeler. Now you know.
The pummeler.
And they were like, he's not even wearing his mech. He's like, no, I just pulled my shirt up over my head and then just hit him a whole bunch. And it just became this ongoing thing throughout it. And he kept doing it now where he was setting it, and he would, like, twist his fist. Like, which setting do you want? Mild, severe, or Armageddon?
So, Armageddon.
I don't even think he thought of that one.
I get it. The pummeler.
Yeah, did you watch the cabbage thing when I sent that video?
The cabbage thing?
Yes. Jazz originally told us about James A. Caster, and I sent a video of him.
It doesn't...
Well, I know what we're watching between episodes, then.
Doesn't sound familiar.
I know what we're watching between episodes. Hello, everyone. welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast that is... a slow, modernized reboot of the Epic of Gilgamesh. Not telling you which one of us is Enkidu, but I think you know.
Yeah, I think they know.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 379.
And once that's done, we're going to do 380.
Right after.
Because William is whipped. Sorry, I, like, never get to say that, so I like pretending.
Okay, congratulations.
Yes, William's wife is making him not record a podcast for her birthday. She's like, you must pamper me for 24 hours.
She's not making me do
that. Absolutely sounds like your wife.
Yeah.
She's all about, first we're going to go to the jewelry store, and then we're going to go out to the fanciest of dinners.
Yeah.
The fanciest.
We're probably not going to do any of those things.
Your wife cannot stop talking about how fancy things have to be on her birthday. She's so obsessed.
Yep.
I don't buy my wife jewelry.
And I talk about how interesting things are.
You know,
like
who buys my wife?
Like an interesting monster should have an interesting hairdo.
Do you know who buys my wife jewelry?
No.
My mother.
Oh.
Just constantly.
My wife.
Any, like, Christmas or birthday, it's always my mom. Sometimes it's her mom, but it's, like, always my mom.
My wife's not really into jewelry.
Same thing
much.
With mine. Like, so. She is some. She has a modest amount, and there are times where she puts things on. And there are two or three things that she wears pretty consistently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, wedding ring, engagement ring. She used to have a different wearing that she wore on the other hand, but it broke, and that I had gotten her, and she doesn't wear that anymore. And she's got, like, one necklace that she likes wearing most days. It's a very simple silver thing. But that's it. And in the early days, you know, I've been acculturated. I was buying her jewelry. I got her a set of pearls. I got her this jade necklace. I got a couple of pendants. And she liked them. She still likes them. She never wears them. There's never an occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I was like, oh, that's just how she is. And then later I was like, you know what? I like that's how she is. I also like that she's not a person that wears makeup. Same thing. Also, because she's not a person who wears makeup, she's not a person that needs to wear makeup. Because frequently, when people are covering up things with makeup, it's because they've been wearing up makeup so long that their skin's in really bad condition.
Ooh, yeah, that can happen.
People get surprised when I say she doesn't wear it. I'm like, no, not at all. If we're doing something really fancy, maybe just a little touch here or there, but heck, if we're doing something really fancy, I'll put on a little. So. I should explain the show, because I'm not explaining it next time. You know how this is with two-parters. Also, people, seriously, you got to write in. I feel like people aren't writing in because I feel like four people are listening right now.
Just four, huh?
One is Coffee.
Okay.
And she's did it. She wrote it in when I asked.
Mm.
One is Mark. And I'm just not sure he's caught up to where I started begging. One is Craig, and he's foreign. And one is my boss, and she's just a jerk, so that's why she's not. I suppose Jazz is also listening, so Jazz must also be a jerk.
Isn't Stu listening?
And not Azure Talon consistently. Oh, listening? Azure Talon theoretically is listening. I feel Azure Talon, he must be in a good mood. I feel Azure Talon writes questions in to punish me. So that may be it. But at this point, honestly, I'll take some Azure Talon questions if that's what. We need something, people. We're going to run out, and we're going to be super sad. And this is what the podcast sounds like when we're happy. So just imagine.
It has happened once. We did run out once.
We did at once. and we both ritually cut off two fingers because of that. So that's on y'all.
They grew back.
Like, it was part of the deal. Yeah, yours did.
Well,
mine are still.
I don't care about yours.
I'm constantly. This isn't the evil universe you're supposed to.
Oh, so, got it mixed up there.
No taking any pennies. The 8-year-old next door, I have this constant thing where I'm always making up stories about how he and I went and did something, and then he ate off two of my fingers, and then I hold him up, you know, bent like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to be like, what? No, I did. And nowadays, it's just this thing. And it's, we have a few games like this that he really enjoys pretending that he really doesn't enjoy things I say. So he does this whole thing where he's like, not again. You always say that. Yeah. We also have a thing like that where I can't remember what his age is. And he loves being, like, exasperated. He's like, no, I said 8. Actually, I have a good story about him. Oh, first I gotta explain how the podcast works. Okay, so, here's how it works. We have a hat, it's magical, and that has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, in theory, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, things like that. Because they love us, and they want it to continue. And they love the hat, and the hat commands them. It's 8 servants. I'm 6 of them. He's 2 of them. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air. Talk about them until we're bored. Do that for about an hour, and that's the whole show except for the parts that aren't, which is most of it. And we're going to do 2 tonight because, as I said, William is whipped. So, anyway.
You know, if I hadn't suggested we double up, I don't know if she even would have noticed if I...
I would guess not. I certainly don't think she would have had a problem with it.
It just would have been another day.
Yeah.
No. I think she has it off. And that's mostly why I suggest doubling up, because I want her to be able, if she decides she wants to do something, that then we can.
Like the fanciest of dinners.
But she didn't ask me to do it. I just did it.
So every week we have dinner with the neighbors. I think I've mentioned that before. And they just got back from a big trip they were taking to Florida, where they went to Universal Studios and they went to Disney World. And the main reason they went is a friend of theirs who lives down there was getting married. And so they went to the wedding. But so they came back from this big trip, and it was the first time the kids had been on a plane and all this. And so I really want to hear about it. But I got over there before Trish did. So the 8-year-old's in there, and I'm like, I want to hear all about your trip, but Trish isn't here yet. So in the meantime, I heard you had a play date today. Tell me about that. And so they started telling me about that. And it was very confusing because it's twins, but they kind of scrunch the names together. So I thought it was one friend with a very elaborate name.
Mm.
But anyway, we figured that out. I'm like, so what did you do? And he's like, well, first we did some ninja training.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're like, uh-huh. I was like, huh? And he's like, you know, we just played around and played ninjas. I'm like, okay. I was like, so you learned, did you learn like Ninja Vanish? He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, when you, like, throw the smoke bomb and you disappear. And he says, no, but I know how ninjas do that. And I was like, oh, really?
Mm.
How does that happen? So the 8-year-old tells me, he's like, what they do is before they throw the smoke bomb, they make sure they're standing over a sewer. And then they throw the smoke bomb and they go in the sewer. I'm like, that is pretty smart. But what happened... What about ninjas are older than sewers? So what happened before then? And also, like, what if a ninja's, like, out in the country or something? And he says, I don't know. Then, and again, no trace of irony, very sincere. He's like, they probably transform into a grain of sand.
Oh, sure.
And the problem here is I have to go like that. I'd say, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. Where my head is screaming, dude, if they had that move, they should just use that every time. Fuck sewers,
yeah,
man.
Forget the sewer.
Why are you bothering?
Yeah.
And it's like the ultimate defense, too, because even if they know you can do it, like, which grain of sand are
you? Sure.
And even if they figured out, like, what are you going to do to a grain of sand? I was talking about it with my gaming group, and the closest we could think of is you just have to stand there and be like, I know you're there. I know you're a grain of sand. I'm not leaving until you transform back. But I'm like, yeah, no, once you get... So now I ask him when I see him, I'm like, have you learned how to turn into a grain of sand yet? He's like, no, I'm like, you should work on that, because that's awesome. So how was your week?
It was fine. I mean, wife started playing Horizon Zero Dawn.
Wow, I have power. What'd she think?
I think she likes it. I was ill quite a bit last week.
Oh, dear.
I told her, don't, you know, go ahead and play it. I got to lay down, but you can go ahead and play it. I couldn't watch because, you know, moves around a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So I haven't actually seen very much of what she's been doing, but she seems to like it. And she seems to be anxious to play it when we have time. And, you know, we're trying
you
to watch...
You should get on watching it soon because it is really pretty.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous game.
We're trying to watch Game of Thrones also, but...
Yes.
Twice now, Netflix has sent us damaged discs
that,
that are like... And it's not like we get the next three discs and the damaged disc is the third one so we can send it back and
it's always the first.
It's always the very first one, so the other two have to sit there. So she's been playing the game more often, actually, than she kind of wants to, because I think she'd rather burn through
some
the
Game of Thrones.
But she is, I think she's enjoying
probably the game. Getting ahead of me.
I think she's enjoying the game. And I've been working on, I'm working on this alternate reality story, but every once in a while I have to take a break from it, work on something else, and then go back to it. And some time ago I decided one thing I was going to do as a break from it was I was going to make an Arthurian timeline, like, you know, if Arthur actually existed, when would it make sense and all that kind of stuff. Not in having any assumption that he did exist, because I don't think he did, but just trying to figure out what would make the most sense based on the stuff that's out there. And I decided, well, most scholars think that Claudius, and I don't know how much of the Arthurian stuff the Claudius character's in, but he's in the Mallory stuff. I think he's Clovis. Clovis I, the guy who started the Merovingian dynasty and sort of started France, you know?
I'm just going to nod.
Well, anyhow, if you take that as true, then it really narrows, I mean, you know, because his dates are very specific and we know what they are. So it sort of puts everything into a very specific context. And actually, everything has to fit in a kind of a very specific way. So I did that just as a little exercise to distract me, and then I, you know, have a little fun with that. Then I'd go back to the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd work on that for a little bit. I have to take a break, so I'd go back and I'd be playing with it. But for the last week or so, I've just been playing with that because it's gotten so interesting to me.
Where does Transformers 5 fit into it?
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Are you sure?
But I just keep...
I feel like that was covered in Transformers 5.
I keep adding layers, because at first it was just, here are historical things about Clovis. Okay, well, if I'm going to have Clovis, then I have to have these other historical figures, and so I have to put them all in there, like who's the Pope, who's the emperor in
of course you have to.
Constantinople, you know.
Absolutely.
Who are all these people?
You can't possibly do it without knowing who the emperor was in Constantinople.
So I put all that stuff
not
in.
Not Istanbul. Constantinople.
I put all that stuff in, and then it's like, okay, well, now I have to figure out where Uther and Ambrose fit in and all that stuff, so I put that in. And then there are other stories like, well, when did that story happen? What would that, when that makes sense? So I put that in there.
You got to figure out which lake had the lady in it.
Well, you got to sort out who Morgan and Morgana, are they the same? Are you, also, is Tristan and Isolde going to be in there? And if they are you still going to keep the affair between Guinevere and Lancelot? Because it kind of, it's repetitive otherwise.
It all goes back to the Mithras cults. So.
And then it's like, well, are we going to keep magic? Are we going to keep, are there going to be dragons in it? Are there? Well, then we're going to keep this story and that story. So now it's just turned, it's like 50 pages now.
So you're trying to figure out what year the dragons were there.
No. It's gone beyond that. See, it's gone to, if I was telling this story, like writing a book.
Clinical obsession.
Yeah, it's gotten way out of control. And so now it's like I'm almost writing a treatment for something that's kind of a cross between Game of Thrones and Vikings and maybe some other thing.
I feel like it's like the humanities version of A Beautiful Mind.
But it's set in like around 500 AD. And it's been fun and interesting, but it was supposed just to be a little exercise and a distraction. Like, you know, like I'm doing this world building and I'm stuck, so I'll do world building and something else to get unstuck. And now I'm kind of stuck. I kind of am more interested in doing that world building.
Well, see, now you got me nervous because I've started doing some writing, nothing to do with Oddwings. Actually, most of the writing I'm doing right now has to do with the two different role-playing games I'm trying to set up right now. But I've also been doing some, like, free writing stuff, and I finally let myself dabble a little bit in the free writing with some ideas for stories that I have that, first of all, have to wait. They have to at least wait till Oddwings is done and till Becky James Lowenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates, exclamation point, is done. So years out there. But also are not particularly fleshed out yet, so yeah. I'm just, like, playing with them. But now you got me nervous. I'm going to get, like, onto one of them and go crazy.
Well, I mean, I, you know, this doesn't...
For 6 months.
This actually doesn't happen to me very often, but it just... I'll probably force myself to stop at a point and say, okay, this, you know, this is enough. Go back to what you were doing. But I have kind of enjoyed it, and it's been kind of interesting to do. I don't know if I'm going to do anything with it, but
what I really
been an interesting exercise.
What I really want to come out of this is like a 3-minute film that we make that's a montage of you like studying stuff on the internet, and then we do like the cork board with the yarn connecting
yep,
the
yep,
things.
That's right.
And then no, that's the
piles
height
of
it.
Gotta have piles of books.
Is you're sitting in front of two monitors showing different scenes from First Night. Remember with Sean Connery?
Yeah.
And, all that?
Yeah.
And like you freeze frame on a shot and you're just looking at it real carefully while we have like intense music playing in the background.
Mm.
And then when it's like just things you're looking at that says Arthur and has a like a drawing of King Arthur and then has Arthur, the character from the PBS show, and like question mark next to it. We need to make this. But the problem is it feels like a scene in a larger thing.
It does.
It could easily have fit into the Project Ulysses if we ever did that.
Yeah. Anyway, how was your week?
It was fine. It's not that interesting. Trish isn't here right now. I dropped her off at the Quad Cities last night. She's babysitting the niece and nephew back in Chillicothe. And then Saturday, I'm going up there, and I'm actually having lunch with a member of my gaming group who had to move to Illinois to take care of her parents in a little podunk town there. So we're going to catch up. And then, yeah, and then I'll be there and stay Saturday night. And then Sunday, Father's Day, my mother-in-law, back before she had her big stupid fall and broke her everything, arranged for the Raleigh Ringers, which is a handbell choir that she's in love with, to actually come to a local church in Chillicothe for a fundraiser concert. That's happening on Father's Day. So we're all going to attend that. And then Trish and I will come home from that.
We're celebrating Father's Day on Saturday, so.
That's confusing. What else? There hasn't been a lot. I have not been playing a lot of Horizon Zero Dawn. I guess I did a lot on the weekend, but then I haven't so much. For some reason, I've been really into watching a lot of Riff Tracks. I don't know why. I'm in the zone right now where I find them really funny.
Tell me this. How many hours did it take you to get to the Proving?
Not a ton. Well, a while, though, because, yeah, they let you run free right before that, and so I just went all over. But here's the thing. You're all over the Sacred Lands. The Sacred Lands is such a tiny drop in the bucket of the world map.
Sure.
Like, it's crazy. I don't know for sure. Probably at least 10 hours.
Wow, okay.
I mean, you could go faster, but I went and did, like, every side quest I could find.
Well, that's about how long it took her, too. So I was sure she took, like, 4 times longer than anybody else would take.
I think we both probably took longer than a lot of people, but I'm very big on that. And that's part of the thing. I hit a point that I feel is sort of mid-pointy. Like, a few things got revealed, but there's still a lot of mysteries going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have probably spent another 15 hours now just doing side shit lately. So, like, yeah. I've put in a whole bunch more hours, and I haven't progressed at all.
Yeah, same with her. Yeah.
But, yeah, I finally figured out why the world sucks. But I haven't figured out why the world is not completely lifeless, which is the next clue, and that'll have to come later. But I have, like, all the weapons and stuff now. There are a lot of interesting weapons in that game.
Yeah.
That's been kind of cool. And actually, there's more than you realize, because now I've done some quests, which has given me completely different weapons also.
Mm.
Some Hunter's Lodge stuff and things like that.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's a really great world, and it's a really gorgeous game.
I can't get into Ashley Birch's voice performance at all.
Is that who that is?
Yeah.
The whole thing is weird in that it's like this tribe of people, one or two of whom look like Vikings, Viking guys. Almost everybody else looks either like Australian Aborigines or like some sort of East Asian. And then we have Lindsay Lohan. Aloy's a great character, but she looks and sounds like an escaped Disney teen actor.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird. And I know that's sort of the point, is she's not part of them, but I'm like, it just looks so weird and sounds so weird.
It is kind of jarring when she's interacting with someone, and you look at them, and then you look at her, and you think, wait, what just happened?
And she's lived among the, like, she should at least be tan, like, from all this, but no, she's the whitest motherfucker in the game. But I'm really enjoying, for a while it was a little but I'm finding all the history books and stuff around, and that stuff is fascinating. Not that, there's modern ones where you find stuff, but there's somebody who went and scribed basically the history of all the different groups.
Mm.
And that stuff to me is very interesting.
Mm.
So, like, I understand how the Carja came to be and what the Carja did and how the Oseram are involved and the Nora and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, there'll be the expansion, which goes up and deals with starts with a B. I don't remember. But they're weird shamanic people.
I don't remember either.
But yeah, so that's been pretty cool too. I really like it. I really enjoy it. But I'm getting excited for these other games. I'm getting excited for, I don't know if I'm going to play it or not. Have you seen anything about Vampyr? It's Vampyr, but it's spelled.
I've heard like that. Some stuff.
So it's basically an RPG, I think. It's out right now. You can get it like on PlayStation 4 or whatever. And it's a Victorian-type gothic thing. You're this vampire, and you just recently got turned, and you have to solve all these mysteries in this creepy, scary little gothic town. Apparently, the graphics absolutely look like they're a decade old.
Because,
like, that wasn't their focus. Like, so the graphics are very old style, but I mean, fine. The big thing about it is you have some control over the difficulty. What it is, as a vampire, you can choose to feed, but there are only people that you actually interact with and, like, they have a name and stuff can be fed on. Both good and bad, but it's not, like, random faceless people. They are worth, apparently, just a ton of experience, but they'll die. But, like, if you feed off of them, like, you will level up a whole bunch and get new powers and stuff like that every time. But first of all, it completely changes the landscape because that person is taken out of the story.
Mm.
And so, like, the environment will change and possibly get worse, and you don't know. Also, any quest lines or storylines they had are gone.
Yeah.
And as you interact with individuals more, they are worth even more XP. And they have a glow about them, an aura, that gets brighter the more they're worth. So it's this, they really got this thing of the torment of whether or not to feed. Because you could be a good vampire, the game's going to be way harder.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's this constant temptation sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that idea. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that seems brilliant to me. So I really, and I tend to love that setting, the very gothic, spooky
Sure.
So I'm really kind of curious about that one, but I'm going to try not and get that in the mix because there's too much other stuff I want to play, but that one looks really cool.
There's going to be a new Star Wars game.
Is there?
Mm-hmm. Set between
We're running out of room between things.
Yeah, it's set between Revenge of the Sith and New Hope, I think.
All right.
And
we already have two movies in there.
So that might be interesting. And Fallout 76 was announced.
God damn it.
But that's going to be some online thing.
Multiplayer online thing, so I can't play it. I'm really pissed about that. Also, Cyberpunk 2077 looks fucking amazing. It's going to be first person.
Oh.
I can't play it. I'm quite unhappy about that.
That's too bad.
They also announced absolutely nothing about Elder Scrolls 6. Other than, of course we're working on it, because why the hell would we throw that cash cow away? But, like, they didn't. Their little teaser didn't say anything about when it is, where it is, how it is, or when it might possibly be coming out. Mm. So it was like, ooh, that makes sense. Okay.
A lot of Wonder Woman news has dropped also.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 1984 is when it's set.
Yes, and Steve Trevor's going to be there in a tracksuit.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
They didn't even make the joke when I was really like, we don't know if it's really him or if it's somebody pretending to be him or like he was raised from the dead or like a descendant who looks like him. And I'm like, yeah, it's his son. Don't you remember the TV show? It's his son, also named Steve, played by the same actor.
It almost have to be his grandson, really.
But I love that idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just for funsies, I watched that Cracked Responds Batman vs. Superman video again, where we're first introduced to Wonder Woman. And Batman says, I don't know, I thought she was with you. And they're like, Batman, she's with you. You emailed her. You specifically told her to come here.
You know, what's interesting, I don't know if we talked about this before, but I put forward to someone, maybe it was on here, the idea that one way they could maybe deal with how the films have gone so far, and also
is to apologize.
Well, and also I know that
we're sorry.
Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot have both made public statements about how they didn't feel like the way Wonder Woman was portrayed in the other two films was true to her character, or true to how the character was portrayed.
From what I know, I can buy that.
In the first
absolutely.
Film. So, when they said that, and they were saying it in the context of what they were thinking of doing for the next film, I got the impression that maybe they were just going to pretend those other two films didn't even happen and just do whatever they wanted. And so I suggested that what they should do is they should have a regular continuity that starts with Wonder Woman and let Patty Jenkins just do whatever she wants with that, like it's like the other films didn't even happen. And then take Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and Justice League and package them as a trilogy and bill it as the signature series. And what the signature series is some director wants to come in and do a one-shot Harley Quinn movie, whatever they want, not in continuity, they can do it. Someone wants to come in and do a trilogy of Wally West Flash, they can just do it. It doesn't have to be part of the continuity. And it'll be called Signature because the directors are the ones who are the creative visionaries of it. And so the first Signature series trilogy will be what
Snyder
did.
Bullshit.
And then, you know, there's going to be a... It's greenlit. There's going to be a Joker origin story with...
Oh, my God. There's going to be so many movies with Joker.
Isn't that Martin Scorsese was doing it or something?
Scorsese's doing a standalone Joker that will not be Jared Leto.
Right.
There's also going to be a different standalone Joker that is Jared Leto.
Right.
There's also going to be a Harley Quinn and Joker standalone that is Jared Leto. There's also going to be Suicide Squad 2, which is going to have both Harley Quinn and Joker played by Jared Leto. Fuck all of that.
So that was my idea. Have something called the Signature Series, and then you could do whatever the heck you want. Plus, you could retroactively put the Zack Snyder stuff in its own little place. Well, now what they're saying in the trades is that they're thinking that they did talk about the Scorsese Joker origin story being outside the continuity, and it was going to be billed as something called DC Dark or something like that. Well, what if they do that to the Snyder stuff too? What if...
What, DC crap?
No, just... when I was saying a signature series, just call it Dark or Black or whatever they're going to call it, and Snyder's trilogy will be a version of that. And that's what they'll call what I was going to call Signature. Now, I wanted... The reason I picked Signature was so you could do whatever you want. It didn't have to be dark or black or gritty or whatever. But I guess that's what they're going to go with. They haven't decided. It was just...
You should call them quick before they've decided.
Well, I mean, I've posted it in various places in responses to, like, comments people made in forums and videos and stuff just to see if other people thought it was a decent idea. No one ever said anything. But it sounds like that they're kind of going to go that direction. But, like I said, they're going to call it... They haven't decided. They're going to call it DC Black or DC Dark. And I'm just thinking, don't be so narrow. Just, you know, like I said, the Signature series just says, hey, it just invites directors to come and do something interesting and different. And then you can have a continuity completely separate from it that maybe you just let Patty Jenkins handle that because she seems to be good at it. So, yeah, it sounds like that's kind of what they're going to do. But I think by labeling it as specifically Dark or quote-unquote Black, whatever that's supposed to mean,
DC Dork.
It's only going to be directors who want to make something like Quentin Tarantino if he wants to make a DC movie. But I mean, I won't
see it anyway, so I don't care.
I would open it up to someone who wants to make something that's totally comedic if they want. Someone wants to make a Super Friends movie, you know?
Oh my God.
That's kind of comedic. They should be able to do that.
Super Friends movie. Oh, Jesus. I actually Dax Shepard as Aquaman.
I have ideas for that, actually. I would make a Super Friends movie, and it would be awesome.
I believe that. I would see your Super Friends movie. In fact, anyway. I would use a portion of my enormous fortune to finance your Super Friends movie. We could distribute it independently. Speaking of which, so Cameron Esposito, comedian, of which my wife and I are a fan, wife of Rhea Butcher,
yeah, right.
Comedian of which my wife and I are a bigger fan, but we love both of them, released her latest special / album. It is called Rape Jokes. And apparently it is just that. It's an hour comedy about rape jokes.
Wow. You can fill an hour with that?
She felt she needed to. And part of it is she felt that she could and should do this at this point in time specifically. Because so much is going on related to this right now, and movements and people getting called up and things like this. People are saying it is quite good. Some people are saying everybody should see it. Some people are saying definitely every man should see it. It is at Cameron Esposito's website, I think it's just CameronEsposito.com, for free. You can stream it there. I think that's the only option at this point.
Wow.
I was worried. I'm still nervous about seeing it / hearing it. And I finally sort of figured out where that comes from. A while back, Tig Notaro released a special called Live. That was part of the joke. It's spelled L-I-V-E, but everybody's like, Tig Notaro Live. She's like, no, it's Live. She always wanted to do that. She thought it'd be funny. It is funny. But that special, I think we've talked about this, was not a planned special. It was when she was going to go up and do a set one night, and that right before the show, she found out she had cancer.
Yeah.
And so she went up on stage and just spewed out stuff about cancer and stuff about the C. diff that she had and her mom dying and all this stuff. And it was incredibly raw. It was still quite funny. It was amazing. It also was very uncomfortable for me, and I listened to it once and will never probably listen to it again. It was a trauma to go through. It was a good trauma. I'm glad I did it. I recommend it to people. But it's not a let's hear some jokes kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it haunted me for a while, as it should. But so, like, this, I'm like, holy shit. An hour of rape jokes. That could haunt the hell out of me. But I have read some more stuff. I read the AV Club did a review, and they did a pretty good review of really reviewing it. Like, it's just a comedy special. Like, not not so much about, oh, it's this particular thing. And it sounds like it's pretty funny. It's fairly positive, actually, in a lot of ways. It is very raw in places. I mean, she polishes the shit out of this, but I mean, it's very vulnerable in places. But I'm kind of excited to hear it now, but I'm still nervous because that's rough. And there's always a thing for me, you know, with all due humility or whatever, a lot of these things that are, have social message, I see them or I consume the media and I'm like, that is good. I didn't need it. Like, I didn't learn anything from it. It didn't give me a new perspective. Mm. And frequently, in this kind of thing, it's also difficult to go through. Mm. And it's why, I mean, this is the root of when I talk about, like, I won't watch Holocaust movies anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing new for me to learn, and it's very hard to watch them. So if I'm not getting any payoff in a new perspective and stuff like that, why would I do it?
Yeah.
I get that from other things. And there's a part of me that's like, some part of my brain is like, that's totally what's going to happen here. But I think that part is wrong. So I think I'm going to go for it. But I mean, like, to a degree, I'm like, yeah, I don't rape. I understand rape culture. I understand the institutionalized acceptance of sexual assault. Like, I get that. And I get that I'm part of the problem by my very socialized nature and all that kind of thing. I'm like, I don't know that I'm going to get something new out of this. But I'm like, you know what? This one, I think this one's worth the risk. So I'm definitely going to watch it at some point. But, yeah, a little rough. A little made me a little nervous. We'll see what happens. I thought I had some more stuff. I have a weird-ass movie to talk about, but I'm going to save that for next week.
Okay.
Yeah, we got, I mean, if we come up with more stuff, we can do it afterwards. But hat things.
Come up with more stuff.
Ooh, it's a note card.
It's been abridged.
All right.
It's from Azure Talon.
Okay. Wow, he heard the beginning of the podcast and already wrote in. Good on you.
So, women's clothing sizing?
Women's clothing sizing.
Yeah. Sexist, manipulative, insane, or some combination thereof.
Ah!
I'm not sure I follow what he's asking.
All right. He is saying, in the category of women's clothing sizing, is it sexist, manipulative, insane, or some combination?
Well, why is it any of those things?
Because it totally is those things.
Oh.
Although it's not like, just sizing. Women's clothing as a whole is fucked up.
You mean like having a size zero and...
Well, just the entire nature of it. When you buy jeans, how do men size jeans?
There's a waist and inseam measurement.
Yes. There is essentially how big around are you and how long are you.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get a, you know, relaxed fit, boot cut, whatever. But that's more of a stylistic thing.
Sure.
Women's jean sizes are a number. It bears no relation to a specific measurement. And it doesn't have a lot of consistency over brands. And there are other things that get in there, like petite and stuff like that, that change what the size number means, but in ways that I, as somebody who was not raised in that, I don't understand.
Hmm.
Absolute nightmare. But the entire industry is a disaster. And the number one issue, the biggest issue, is fucking pockets. Women's clothing doesn't have pockets. So much. They have no pockets, or if they have pockets, they're a little tiny.
And they're not very practical.
Just recently, I had to get the key fob for a car out of my wife's jeans. I get them, and I found it very easily because the pocket, the jeans pocket, like the real, like where you put your wallet pocket, was the size of the key fob.
Wow.
And these are just normal jeans. These weren't like special, fancy, bedazzled ones or shit like that. Like, these were just normal jeans. This is a constant thing. I had a friend the other day who showed me something she found in a thrift store that she really liked. It was a top. And her favorite thing about it is it had these two really big-ass pockets on it. And she was so excited. Like, I have seen the most manly men who are finally married, and they're like, holy shit, why do women's clothes have no pockets? But there's all sorts of other factors. It's frequently more expensive for essentially the same thing. It is consistently made of lighter and sheerer material, women's clothing as a whole. And it's also often made much more cheaply with poorer stitching and things like that. It falls apart quicker.
Even though, as you say, it's still more expensive.
Yes, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. And it's why, and it can get at the heart of a lot of these stereotypes, like the women are always like cold, like in the office or whatever. It's always the women's like, it's because literally you're wearing a shirt, I'm wearing a shirt. They're like the same kind of shirt, but yours is a women's shirt. It is way thinner. It is way lighter weight. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why, but women's fashion is also fucked up in terms of image and stuff like that. Sure. We all know about that shit. Like, models are coat racks with the smallest of boobs and nothing else. But all of that aside, just the fundamentals of how the clothes are made is terrible.
And priced. And marketed.
And the sizing makes no sense.
See,
I have known many women who switched to... I've known many women who have switched to men's jeans for their jeans for a variety of reasons, including pockets. But I know some that have done it because they're just like, I can't... The sizes don't work. Because like I said, it's one number, it's unrelated to any specific measurement, and occasionally there's adjustments if it's petite or if it's something else like that. And shockingly, because the one number means everything, some women don't fit into that number even though that's their size. Mm. Because they have a size 8 waist, but they have a size 12 hips or a size 7 leg. Like, it's ridiculous. And they're like, with men's, I know what I can get. Mm. Like, it's pretty straightforward. I suppose they probably don't need the room for the balls, but you know, whatever. You keep snacks down there or whatever you want. I don't care. It is ridiculous. My answer, as you're telling, is a combination, definitely. There's a lot of manipulation going on. It's absolutely insane. And it's super sexist by virtue of the fact that it's women's clothing only.
Where does it even come from? I mean,
because, I have no idea.
Because as you're saying, just about every, I mean, except for t-shirts, small, medium, large, extra large, whatever. But for a button-up shirt or any pair of pants, for when a man goes to buy these things, there's measurements on the package or whatever.
And
so why wouldn't that
women's
just work
t-shirts
that way
also have a small, medium, leg kind of thing? But it's a women's tee, which means it is tailored, or it is tapered in such a way that the size may not work for you, depending on whether or not your chest matches up with what they think the rest of you is supposed to match up with.
Right, right.
And again, no pockets. It's ridiculous. There are so many places online where people will teach you how to very quickly and easily, through knitting, through sewing, through other means, attach a pocket on something that already you already have.
Well, like I say, where does this come from? I mean,
my hunch is the pocket thing originally comes from the erroneous concept that, like, well, women always carry a purse, so they just put everything in there. That's the only thing I can think of. But it could be like chicken and egg. Did women start carrying purses because they didn't have any goddamn pockets?
I mean, I don't really carry very much in my pockets. So it
I carry a wallet in one side, keys in the other. That's it. My breast pocket, and I always have to have a breast pocket. I have one shirt that doesn't have one. It's a gorgeous shirt. Hardly ever wear it. Doesn't have a breast pocket, is where my phone goes. Mm. And that's it. Trish has a bag. She actually has a bag and a purse. The purse is smaller, so if she only needs a few things, there's that. And then she got the bag, which is much bigger. And if she doesn't want to take any of those, frequently, like, if there's anything, I have to take it. But more commonly, she's like, I'm not taking anything, so I know I'm going to have to pay. I mean, you know, it's all our money, but I'm going to be the one that has to do that. And in a couple cases, I'm like, are you sure you don't at least want your ID? Because she still gets carded for drinks and stuff. She wants a drink. But, like, she's like, I'm not taking anything because she doesn't want to take a purse. So I have the car keys. I have the money.
Right.
She is absolutely beholden to me.
Yeah.
Luckily, I'm a hell of a guy. But, yeah, no. And also, fuck it. I have a purse now. And you know me. I get mad if people call this a man purse. Or a merce or some bullshit like that. Like, no, it's a purse. If you saw it on a woman, you'd say it was a purse. Same object. It's a purse. Shut up.
So who came up with the numbered sizes and all that
stuff? I'm sure men. That's as far as I can tell you.
As a marketing scheme? Or
I have no idea. If you know anything about how women's sizing came to be in the world, I mean, besides just the patriarchy, like any specifics... Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us. Because, yeah, I have no clue. I just know it's fucked up.
Because, I mean, it's interesting that, like you said, for men and women it's different. But why would that be? Like, if men's clothes had measurements before women's clothes were you know, sold... I mean, because there was a while where a lot of women in the United States didn't buy a dress. They bought material and stuff,
and they made
it themselves.
And, I mean, the evolution of men's fashion and women's fashion clearly went in different directions and at different paces.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
And so if the sizing got tied to that, I could easily see it being marketing, because nowadays it totally fucking is. First of all, there's a lot of grief if you're not below a certain number size. But now also, it's a really big damn thing. If like, hey, we have sizes going up this high.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, these are plus sizes. Or, we only go this high. You have to go to our special same brand fat store. They don't, but they say something like that. Mm-hmm. They're like, you know, statuesque or XL or what, you know, something ridiculous. Or plus is the common one. For guys, I think it's husky and XL, and for women, it's plus.
Big and tall. That's another thing.
Big and tall for guys. Yeah. And again, nobody says fat there either, but we know that's what, and that's actually one of the few really hilarious things I remember from the original Roseanne show when Dan went to a big and tall place, and the guy was talking to him about working there. He's like, you know, we get a lot of the customers that are like, you know, you would relate to them because you had the stuff. And Dan's like, oh, no, I only shop here because I'm tall. And the guy's like, uh-huh. And I'm like, I bet a lot of guys say that. I don't. I'm like, yeah, I'm here because I'm fat. Where's your fat clothes? Yeah, so it's terrible. I would be curious to know the history of it. I feel like that's a harder thing. I feel like I just couldn't type women's fashion into Wikipedia and pull that up.
Yeah, I think that'd be tough to figure out.
But it's...
I mean, I guess they could just have legitimately, like you said, evolved on two different tracks that didn't have anything to do with each other. And whoever was figuring out how men's clothes would be marketed and everything else just used measurements like a tailor would. But someone on the side of female fashion had to come up with this number system instead of measurements.
Well,
why would they think women couldn't use measurements?
There's the point. This is going to come up at the point at which you switch from custom clothes to mass marketed clothes. I suppose it is possible that whoever started doing that with women's clothes, like, sort of dominated the industry.
Hmm.
And so as others came in, they had to match whatever sizing they had invented.
What?
I'm guessing a fair bit of it is ad hoc. I'm guessing somebody came up with a number and then eventually it's like, this doesn't work. We can't fit people of completely different sizes in various dimensions into a single number. So then they started tacking on other terms to go with it.
Well, I wonder if maybe, what if it had something to do with, for a while, women didn't wear pants. They wore dresses.
Yep.
So there's not going to be an inseam number.
Oh.
So then there's just going to be a waist number, but maybe nobody wanted to see the waist number, so they made other numbers.
And the thing is, boobs just complicate everything.
For
just
the blouses,
in general, because well, for anything up there, because you've got your shoulders and you've got your waist, but then with those two ideas on a man, you could get a basic concept, and, you know, maybe arms or whatever. You could get a basic shape, but then the chest can be anything. And so that's drastically going to change how this works. Like, it presents a whole nother quite variable Z-axis.
Sure,
to
but then also women had undergarments that were supposed to cinch them in a way that standardized, somewhat standardized their shape.
And the thing that really, oh my God, this annoys me. They might go lower than this, I don't know. There's size 0.
Yeah, size 0. Mm-hmm.
What the? That's the worst thing. Yeah. Why would you say this is a size, like that's the most damning thing. To be like, yeah, there are women out there who are so thin, they take up no space. And we think this is a good thing. Like, why? I guarantee you, the women who wear size 0 clothes, there is no measurement anywhere on them that is 0.
No, yeah, I'm sure.
Because if there was,
but
there wouldn't be a measurement.
That could have been a situation where after they had the number system in place, they didn't have a size 0.
Women evolved into smaller.
Well, no, they just realized that, oh, there's the demand for a size smaller than this that's still not petite or junior, so let's just call it size 0.
Okay, if I'm being incredibly...
Let's take all the sugar out of it and we can...
it's calorie free. This is size diet. No, but here's the thing. If I am being,
I don't.
I'm gonna say too charitable with that theory. We're still saying whoever designed this system didn't know women existed that were that small, which right there means you should not be the one deciding the sizes for these clothes.
Well,
the fact that there's a whole set of them, enough that it now exists. There's a whole set of women who you didn't know that size was possible means you were not prepared for this job.
Well, do you think women didn't want to see an inch measurement on the clothes they were buying? Like they were happy having
I could see that being a marketing tool.
A code?
Like come here, women, we're very discreet. You're size 7. We won't tell anybody what that means.
Yeah, what that really means.
Of course, once everybody's doing this, another woman will know what a size 7 means. I guess you're fooling the men, which fucking worked, because to this day, I have no fucking clue what a size 7 is.
Well, but that all that does is beg the question, though, of course, because for women to be concerned or to be embarrassed by hearing the number or having a man hear the number, that's also... because of sexist, you know,
and it's
in the
become
culture.
A thing now. Yeah, now they're embarrassed by that number.
Yeah,
I mean they can have the potential to be embarrassed by that.
But at least in front of other women.
That number. Well, and I hear enough shit. I know if somebody's talking above a 14, oh, that's a big person.
Okay.
There, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. I know that just because I've heard it in enough places and heard enough stories. I mean, we have the fucking internet at this point. Hell, if I wanted to, I could figure out what a 7 means. But I don't want to because it's fucked up.
But there are things, though, in our culture where, as you're saying, once you make up a code and everyone knows what it means, then it doesn't really serve much use as a code. Except it does. You know what I'm saying? Like, we do it in our culture.
It's still obvious. It still abstracts it.
Yeah.
So I'm not, when I hear size 7, even if I know what that means, I'm not picturing the specific measurements as I would if you said waist this,
well,
shoulders
well,
this,
even,
blah, blah,
even
blah.
But even if you are picturing it, the point is it becomes a matter of politeness, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, everybody knows what a size 7 is, but we've all agreed to pretend we don't know. And so that,
but,
and that pretending
yes,
makes everybody feel
but
better.
Well, first of all, that's, I don't like that. But second of all, that agreement has fallen apart with women's sizing.
Because
again, they're like, oh, she's a 16. Or the number of stories with the person helping you at the things like, I'm sorry, we don't carry anything above a 12, ma'am.
Yeah, yeah.
With that look that's just judging the shit out of you. It's nobody does that. Well, nobody does that with guys because they don't fucking care. Nobody's like, I'm sorry, sir. You'll have to go to one of our plus-size outlet stores for your clothes. Nobody does that anyway. So, it's not a coincidence that the gender role that gets shamed for that is the gender role that has the bullshit sizing system.
Yeah.
But it's a feedback loop.
Yeah. Right.
It's such a feedback
loop. Like everything else.
Because at least if it was a real number, it has a place in reality.
Yeah,
so,
right,
like,
right.
I'm sorry, your 12-inch waist is too fat for us. It's like, motherfucker, get a ruler. 12 inches is not that, like, that's a thing. But if you can say size 7, it's like, I don't know what that means. Is that bad? They told me it is. All right, we got to get out of here because we have to do another episode. Stay tuned because the 7 o'clock show is nothing like the 6 o'clock show. Two drink minimum resets for the second show.
I actually found this conversation very interesting.
Very much so.
And I'm very interested.
I found it very cathartic because I got to bitch about it. But it sounds like you learned a lot, so I'm happy about that too.
I'd never really thought about it before.
And I'm really hoping it will cause somebody who actually knows this shit to try and explain some sizes to us on the site, themagicaltalkinghat.com. In the meantime, guys, just sit there for about 10 or 15 minutes and we'll be right back. In a week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.